Hello and welcome to Away, Daniel Browning here with you. Meet the singer-songwriter from the tiny homeland community of Mullinger, halfway between Darwin and Alice Springs. She draws her inspiration from Björk. She's been mentored by Brian Ritchie from the Violent Femmes, but her star was born at the Bush Bands Bash.
For me, because I've started off doing music very young, but I've always had this connection with music where it was always not so much a goal, it's always just a feeling. And leading up to now, everything makes sense to what I've done. And I've achieved things without wanting to achieve them.
Eleanor Dixon is my special guest, and a bit later she'll share some of her Mudbra language for the 50th instalment of our Word Up series. Also, circus performer Dale Woodbridge Brown joins me from Auckland. Next month he'll strut his stuff on stage at the Sydney Festival in the cheeky male burlesque outfit Briefs. Now, they've been described as the love children of RuPaul's Drag Race and Cirque du Soleil.
And I'm completely happy. I get to play a touring superstar and then get to go home and go back to Dubbo and just walk around with no shoes on. I feel pretty great. So I hope I don't hit the ceiling just yet. I kind of am just at the beginning of living out my dream life at the moment. So being a clown, I can go forever.
And actor Jimmy Barney takes us away to his homeland, Morbiag Island in the Torres Strait, to talk about his new play, which tells the story of his family across four generations. Stay with me, that's all coming up here on Away. My next guest has a family band with her dad, who's a guitar legend in the bush, as well as an all-female group with her auntie, as well as a solo career. And she does it all from the tiny homeland community of Mullinger, surely one of the remotest places in the country, off the Stuart Highway between Tennant Creek and Catherine. Now, the softly spoken but forthright Eleanor Dixon is a powerhouse. Not only is she a talented and versatile singer-songwriter, but Eleanor is a cultural leader in the making. She's currently in Sydney for a music residency at the Campbelltown Arts Centre, where she's been collaborating with transgender artist Edie Donald for a performance called Anya. Now, Anya, in Mudbra, her language, means what now?
My name is Eleanor Nalyiri Dixon, and I am from Mullinger community. It's 700 kilometres south of Darwin and 700 kilometres north of Alice Springs.
Smack in the middle.
Yeah.
Describe that country for me. Are we talking Tanami Desert? No.
Near it.
Near Tanami.
But it's more black soil country and more lush green kind of environment because of the black soil. And it's not much rocks, but they're just near it. There's a lot of different coloured rocks, and you go further west from where the community is there, then you go on to the Tanami Desert, but then it's all the water system there is very connected. So we have a creek, a really big lake, which is a white lake that has really beautiful clay.
It's a homeland community.
Yep.
So we're talking a very small community of people who are probably connected in some, related in some way.
Yeah.
So how many people in Mullinger?
30 people in the community.
So everyone would be family?
All family, from two sisters, grand grandmothers, my grandmothers.
Does that mean everyone is really close, or does that kind of sometimes mean, you know, relationships can be a little bit...
Yeah, sometimes it can be like that. It can be like, oh...
Get him away.
And, you know, small town talk, like that feel of just everyone knows everybody's business. But good things, good times. But it's kind of isolating from the rest of everything else in a good way, and sometimes in a, you know, not so good way. It was only like a year or two, maybe 3 years ago, that we just got water running into some of the houses.
It's obvious why I think homelands and why outstations need to be maintained. But why do you think, Mullinger should always, why should the government and councils continue to ensure that these small communities are maintained?
Because it's the heart of the people. And, you know, we have traditions that we have to still practice. We have to maintain our culture and our law. And the only way we can do that is by being on the homeland, because that's where the connection is. And it's all on a spiritual level, but on a practical level as well, because we've always lived there. Like our ancestors from the beginning of time, our people have always roamed that part of the country and have kept the country, maintained it, and been at peace with it and lived one with it. And we're still continuing to do that. It's a thing that we are still doing today. And that's why it's so important for us to remain there. I mean, some of the old people, they the elders at home, they're not really into politics. They're not really into the mainstream lifestyle. They're not into wanting materialistic things. They want to just, you know, be able to keep the knowledge. That's all. It's just the knowledge of life. Because it's beyond a person. It's creation. And that's something that's on homeland, and we can't get it.
You can't transport that.
You can't transport it. And the connection with the people and the country, it's our identity. Because that tribe, I'm a Mudbara woman, so I'm from that Mudbara region. Walpi is my neighbouring language group, Kurinji, Luricha. We're all connected, but our homelands are the one that give us that identity. And that's where everything makes sense for us. And it's that's our language. That's the sound of the country right there. Yali, yali marai, logo woro.
Your music, you know, I'm a fan of Rayella, the band that you have with your dad, who's also a very highly regarded, well-established, long-established musician, playing in bands for many, many years. Mm. But you're in Sydney for a residency at the Campbelltown Arts Centre.
Yep.
You're doing something really interesting, really fascinating collaboration that you're working on. But then there's also the other bands. Tell me about all the musical projects that are going on at the moment. We'll get to the one here in Sydney, but you've got Rayella and, you know, the stuff that you do out on country, out at home.
Mm. So Rayella is a family band. Well, I mean, Karajala is too, but Rayella I've started 4 years ago with my dad. First Bush Bands Bash that I did in Alice Springs, and had my dad on stage with me, which was most deadliest thing. And my dad's really deadly too. He's like this young fella. He's old, but, you know, he has this young spirit about him. So he's like, sometimes I have to keep him in line. Mum always called me up and say, make sure your dad take his, you know, medication. So always make sure that dad's all right. But me and dad have been writing songs for like more than 10 years. I started singing when I was 4 years old with dad and a church. And 4 years ago, we started at Bush Bands, but we've written so many songs over the years, and most of the songs about home, about homeland, and about language, and about teaching our children. Yeah, one of the songs that we've written was Warlunga, which is the fire song, and it's a really significant song for us because we're teaching the children about staying connected to country and always acknowledging country first before yourself, and by going back to the fire. And as the acknowledgement comes from something that you don't speak about, it's just you sit and you sing, and you sing for each other, and that's it. And that's one of the songs that me and Dad have done. We've also recorded an EP with the Opera Australia Orchestra, Chamber Orchestra, last year, I think. And that's one of the biggest things that me and Dad have done, one of the biggest projects. And it was Dad's dream to work with an orchestra, and I was like, well, let's do it. You know, like, and it's been beautiful. We've also toured this year in March with Support Act for the Violent Femmes, and it's been massive. And
had you ever heard of the Violent Femmes? I mean,
I have when I was very young. I heard, what's that song? Dun, 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 dun. I've heard that.
Let me go, Blister in the Sun.
Yes, Blister in the Sun. Yeah. I've heard that song.
Let me go on, like I blister in the sun. Let me go on, big hands, I know you're the one.
I never thought in my life that I would meet, you know, and be mentored by Brian Ritchie for 5 years. Never thought that would happen, ever.
And what's he like?
He's the most beautiful thing. Like, he's a beautiful person. He's very encouraging in a way where it gives you space.
Yeah. How did that even come about?
Because we met at Bush Bands Bash in 2014, and I've been going back to Bush Bands for like three or four years now. For me, because I've started off doing music at very young, but I've always had this connection with music where it was always a feeling, following a feeling, not so much what I wanted or what I wanted to achieve, or not so much a goal. It's always just a feeling. Mm-hmm. So I've always followed what I felt. And leading up to now, everything makes sense to what I've done. And I've achieved things without wanting to achieve them. So even with doing like Garajala Giridara, it was a project that we done through Barkly Regional Council in Tennant Creek. And I met a producer, Beatrice Lewis, who came out for 2 years, did the project and ran the program, and with the youth mob and in the community, and we started making music, and Garajala came into a form. And you know, it was important that we talked about these things, about music, about life, about York, and about these spirit beings. And Garajala came, and she's one of the next project that I'd done that is for women, you know, and the acknowledgement of the feminine energy. And it wasn't just about black or white. It wasn't about this place or that place or the differences in people and culture. It was about the whole of humanity and acknowledging the earth and empowering women because of that, because reminding women that the earth and her, your body as a woman, as a female, or your spirit is the most powerful connection that you could have. And that was Garajala. That's the other band that I'm in. So all of those songs is a song cycle for women that we've created in that album. Garajala is a mysterious spirit being from the Sandhills. So she has, for me, a feeling of the connection of the earth. So she's like a being of the earth, a spirit being of the earth, and a female energy, like a really strong feminine energy.
You also mentioned Björk or Bjork.
Yeah.
She's your fan?
I am. I you know, try to keep it on the DL.
Down low.
But because I feel like that's something sacred for me.
She is incredible. I mean, there's no doubt about that. She's amazing.
For me, she is the most truest thing, like the most true thing to herself.
Mm.
Because it's that unapologetic feeling where it's like, I'm okay because I'm okay. I'm good because I'm good. I'm great because I'm great.
And singing in language, I mean, I think that's really, of course, I love hearing you sing in English because I can follow, but there's always, you know, I think there's, language is always present.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer, singing in Mudbara or singing in English?
Mudbara.
Hmm.
Yeah. Mudbara because it's who I am, you know, like it's the sound of the earth. So I was born into... came into the world with that sound. So English wasn't my first language that I was born into. It was Mudbara. To communicate a feeling, it depends on what the feeling is, depends on the energy and what the purpose is of that song. So if there's a song that needs to be written in English and it needs to be expressed, then it will. There's one song in the album, on the album, Garajala's album, which is called Two Worlds Collide. So it explains, that story is in English. And it explains the story of a girl walking in two worlds. And it was how I kind of came into the world, learning two different languages that, two different things altogether, two different worlds. And how do I fit into it? Or how do I make sense of both of these things, two worlds? The Garia sense and our way of living, how do I put it together? And that song made me realize that it's not about either of the worlds. It's about me. And it's about how I journey in it. It's just me.
It's a reality.
It's a reality and it's me, yeah.
It's your world.
Yeah.
You're here in Sydney for a residency at the Campbelltown Arts Centre and a collaboration. Tell me about your collaboration, you know, your collaborator now here for this project, Anya.
Yeah. So I will be collaborating with Eddie Donald. And Eddie and I have known each other for like 4 years now, I guess, or five. And we worked on a project together, mentoring. So we did Sister Sounds in a lot of communities, did music workshops, and we never had a chance. I've always felt, I've always been in awe of Eddie because of how Eddie carried themselves on stage and because of who Eddie is. Eddie lives at home too with me, so we always...
In Mullinger?
Yeah, in Mullinger. Ah. So Eddie's lived out in the desert for a long time because Eddie comes from Sydney.
Mm.
But moved out a few years ago, I think 10 years ago maybe, and worked in the Western Deserts and then came up around Alice and then, yeah, We've known each other for a long time, but I just wanted to create. I mean, me and Eddie, we meet each other on that spiritual level. We don't look at our color of our skin or how well educated we are or all of these things. We don't put each other in a box and say, well, I only want to collaborate with you because of this or this reason or that reason. Like, I really love collaborating with other musicians and artists as well. Yeah, this project, we wanted to tell a story about language and how we wanted to introduce it into bringing the two worlds together and making the connection happen by allowing someone from this part of the world come and enter my part of the world and learn my language, sing my language, you know? And it's a thing that people should do, and that's what we wanted to. Anya in our language, Wanya means what now? So we ask that question, what now? Like now, and what now? What we can't continue to want change. We have to make it, you know, we have to. And that's the feeling behind this project, is that if we want to make a change and we want to bring in recognition and acceptance, we have to actually do it, not talk it. And that's the thing, that now this country talks a lot. This country, this government, if I must say, talks a lot, but there's nothing that's been done. So it's, with this project, it's about telling people, now is the time to act before it's too late, because people do matter.
Singer-songwriter and future cultural leader, Eleanor Dixon. And we heard music from just one of her bands, the all-female group Gadajala Giridhara. Eleanor's just finished a residency with a performance called Anya with musician Edie Donald at the Campbelltown Arts Centre in southwestern Sydney. And Eleanor joins me a bit later to share some mudra, her language, for Word Up. This is Away, Indigenous Art and Culture on RN. Daniel Browning with you. Not many people would cast their grandmother, their mother, their brothers, and even their son in a play, but actor Jimmy Barney has done just that. The play is called My Name is Jimmy, and in it, he tells the story of his family and his homeland, Morbiag Island in the Torres Strait, with his actual family treading the boards alongside Jimmy. You might remember Jimmy from television performances in the telemovie Mabo for ABC TV, also Redfern Now, and the SBS drama The Straits. Jimmy is with Away's Rudy Bremer, and he tells her why he wanted to bring this family affair to the stage.
It's a story of importance about identity and belonging. You know, I know from up in Torres Straits, there is a lot of push in teaching cultural knowledge, cultural practices, and also cultural identity. So I grew up with that, and you know, being in the industry now, always sort of look for an opportunity, especially on the main stage, a mainstream stage, to share a story that connects me back to home. You know, because my bloodline comes from Mabuyag Island, and that's in the western part of Torres Straits. And yeah, it was, I guess for myself, there was an importance, especially that feeling of seeing youth around, especially around remote area up here in North Queensland and in the islands, on the islands, you know, where there is a lot of, I guess, identity crisis, if you want to call it. You know, my nieces and nephews and little brothers and sisters who don't really know where they come from. You know, I think it's very important to share and, you know, make them connect back to home.
And so you have talked about at the core of this show is technology. I'm kind of interested in the fact that, I suppose for you, like you're quite well known on screen. Mm-hmm. And then you've kind of flipped the script by going onto the stage with this story, but to talk about how technology can be used.
Yeah, it's sort of the inspiration for this show was started from, I guess, the earlier drafts. I sort of call it three generations, based on my dad, my father, my late father, myself, and Dimitri. And how Dad was a full cultural man, you know. He spoke Kalalagaoya, that's our language, you know, fluently. And, you know, he grew up on the island, especially on Mabiak. And, you know, he practiced and he walked the culture. I sort of see my generation just in between, and oral history is, that's how I learned everything, you know, is by talking and listening and practicing it, you know, out in the boat and, you know, even gardening and all of that. It just comes through uncles telling me how and why you do it this way. And for myself, I understand the language, but I only speak a little. I don't speak it fluently like my father does. And then you've got Dimitri, who hasn't even been influenced in that lifestyle, who grew up here in Cairns. And, you know, for him to actually know where he comes from, you know, he's got this technology around him now where he can research, you know, you can jump on Google anytime and actually see where the Torres Straits is in Mabiag. And you know, it's amazing how much, you know, you can get on with the camera phones and you can actually film stuff and record our elders, you know, while they're still here and get those information, you know. Whereas for myself, I had to, you know, I practice and it's embedded in me physically, but also, you know, in a memory box up here somewhere, you know. And that was the important sort of process within the three generation, where how can Dimitri's generation understand and, you know, practice his way, his identity, you know, which is his right, by, you know, using technology. And, you know, within the show there is all sorts of different way of storytelling, because it sort of reaches out to audiences.
Your father did pass away during the creation of the play.
Yep.
He is credited as one of the writers, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Losing somebody who's so important to you personally and also to the development of a work. Mm-hmm. What does that do to the process? I mean, on a practical level, you're the new keeper of your culture.
Yeah, no. It was a sudden shock. It was also, you know, a blessing, I guess, that, you know, Dad could open up. And yes, so I've got Dad and Jason Clawine, who's the director, amazing storyteller by, you know, in his own right, that myself and Jason went up to Thursday Island and sat with Dad. And the process that we did was that we just said to Dad, just talk, just yarn, you know. And we started filming Dad, and Dad just started talking. He just started talking about his connection back to home, back to Wagadagam. That's our tribal name, Wagadagam, from Mabiag Island. And we sort of gave him the opportunity because, you know, at that stage, he was the chief of our people, of Wagadagam people. So, you know, I said, Dad, this is an opportunity now. If you want to voice anything, you know, the power of live theater, you know, you can actually, you know, you can actually use that as a platform now. And what do you want to talk about? And I'll just act it out. Or, you know, we didn't have a proper structure. It was just sort of off the bat. Dad just started talking about culture. And then myself and Jason went back to Cairns, and we started structuring everything that he talked about into a script. So that was the process. And sort of I got up and started working, workshopping workshopping some of the scenes and, you know, bring it to life, and then Jason sort of structured around, oh, let's did a bit of cut and paste here, you know, just to get a beautiful sort of storyline, structural sort of form, and that's how. So basically, it sort of all came from Dad, to be honest. And when that sad day come, I think it was 2 years ago now, and just before, you know, the development was finished, before Queensland Theatre was gonna say yes or no to the project, and you know, we lost Dad. And then it sort of put myself and Jason in a position where it's like, this perspective came from him. You know, it was all his perspective, and, you know, he was going to be on stage as well, and I was going to support him. But now, you know, he's not here. He'll be with us spiritually. We have to change it. So we had to rejig, you know, majority of the storytelling perspective, you know, from my perspective. And that was a shift that we had, you know, just before we opened here in Cairns, actually. And a lot of his knowledge and stories, you know, I just sort of preached it, and it sort of came back to my connection to Wagadagam, Mobiag Island. What does that mean to me, and how important it is for Dimitri? When Dad passed on, I'm actually in the position, being the next eldest son, being his eldest son, to be the chief of Wagadagam. And, you know, it personally, you know, I took it really hard. You know, it was really hard for me. I won't lie there. But also, there's also that bigger sort of vision. You know, as you know, from my role and how I can actually continue on carrying the light by using a platform that speaks to everybody, no matter what background you are. You know, anybody come into that theater, you know, will be connected, because it's a humanity story. You know, it's a story about identity, and we all connect back to a place or origin.
I guess, I mean, it also just would be very hard not to feel some kind of connection and sense of community by going to see the play, because it's also, when you've talked about sort of rewriting and shifting things, it includes four generations of your family.
Yes.
Was there ever a point where you thought that it might be, where you thought about maybe casting non-family members?
No, yeah. It was going to be real. It was going to be true. To be honest, it came down for their roles and responsibility within the community. You know, mum and grandma being the, you know, the holders of the songs and dances, because you know that's a big part within the show is having that traditional dancing, and that's where my two brothers come in. You know, I've got there's six of us all together, six boys, but these two, Richard and Conwell, they're actually the keepers, and they're also the dancers within the family, within the Mobiag community. And, you know, they teach dances. So they're actually teachers in their own right, and performers as well. You know, I mean, you know, do traditional dancing, you know, in front of, you know, hundreds of people. You know, they're actually, they're pretty used to it. You know, that's what they do in a daily basis, to be honest. And that's why when we sort of got them in, we didn't want to break them out of their comfort zone. We sort of try and kept them in their lane, you know, mom just being mom, you know, grandma being grandma, and, you know, what she's strong and, you know, her knowledge and what she wants to share, and my brothers, you know, so, and then I just do majority of the talking, and Dimitri being Dimitri, you know, representing all the youth, I guess, you know, within the country, you know. You know, amongst all this, you know, all this chaos.
Actor Jimmy Barney speaking about his play, My Name is Jimmy, which is part of the Sydney Festival. And you can see it in Sydney at Belvoir Street from the 5th to the 21st of January.
Again. Let's be still for, and I know here I'm
a song in memory of 14-year-old Elijah Doherty, who was killed last year in Kalgoorlie by a 56-year-old man, later found not guilty of manslaughter, but of the lesser charge of dangerous driving causing death. And the song features Archie Roach, Kutcha Edwards, Emma Donovan, a whole host of artists, and permission was sought from Elijah's family to release that song. This is Away. Now for the 50th language we've featured so far in our Word Up series, which is also delivered to you as a podcast. Here's Eleanor Dixon, who you heard from earlier in the show. She's back to share some of her beautiful, lyrical Mudbra language.
Bukulba means happy.
Word Up, bringing you the diverse languages of Black Australia. One word at a time.
Kinagai.
Birluin.
Walter.
Kalang.
Badjili.
Ngalungir.
Bambach.
Dianye.
Injamara.
Guram.
Mijal.
Reipiri.
Ngaraguche nama.
Gani warangung.
Munyip.
Domaninialka. Wakaniniana.
Wardadoia.
Ngundingi dangan.
Wukuk.
Kuwayu.
Delkup.
Diepa.
Murupuk.
Hi, my name's Eleanor Nalyiri Dixon. I am a Mudbara woman from Malinja community in the Northern Territory. The language Mudbara is a language that comes out of Nganka. Nganka is a root language that has different dialects. Mudbara is one of them. Mudbara is related to Kurinji. Kurinji is Kalkurinji Dagurugu and Wave Hill area. Also related to Luritja, we have similar words in Luritja as well, and some words in Jingali as well. I speak Mudbara fluently, and that's my father's language. I also speak, I'm learning to speak Garwa. That's my mum's language, mum's side. I have three words in Mudbara. The first one that came to me was Nguramala. And Nguramala has a really, really, it's a word that ties responsibilities as a keeper. So Nguramala means keeper of the country. Nguramala is the word that we use for trees as well, and for water, and for rock. And we have that connection that we share with the trees, and we have a connection, a responsibility that we share with the trees as well. So Nguramala is a word that is keeper. So keeper of the country, and a cycle, also a cycle keeper, which we keep cycles going around, and we share that with the place as well. And through that, we carry songs, song lines through that word Nguramala. So we have songs that for certain parts of the land, or for the water, for fire, and for the elements. The second word is Ngulo. So Ngulo is related to Nguramala. Nguramala carries Ngulo. So we say Nguluwuru is a spirit. A spirit that carries energy. It's like Ngulo is the energy that connects a person's spirit to the ground, to the earth, and to the skies. So it's like a channel of energy that goes up and down. That's Ngulo for us. So it also ties us into the word Nguramala. And I can say in Mudbara, and I can put those two words together, Ngaweleja Nguluwuru Nguramala Dara, which means the keeper of the country, the song people. So the people who carry the Ngulo, the songs. And my last word is Jingichi. And Jingichi means stars. And for me, I've always carried a connection and a feeling to the stars as a woman too. So Jingichi is one that I carry very, very strongly in my spirit And it's a really beautiful word. Chingichinga means a lot of stars. So I can say, Ngayuma Nguluru, Ngayuma Nguramala, Ngaynya Bay Nguluru Chingichinga. So that says, I am connected to the earth, I am connected to myself, and I am connected to the stars. Thank you for listening. I'm Eleanor Dixon. Mandat.
Word Up, bringing you the diverse languages of Black Australia, one word at a time.
Eleanor Dixon speaking some Mudra language spoken in her homeland community of Mullinger. We heard the word for keeper or custodian, the word for spirit or energy, and the word for stars. This is Away on RN, Daniel Browning with you. Gamilaroi man Dale Woodbridge Brown has been many things in his young life. A state gymnastics champion, a dancer, a baton-twirling acrobat, and most recently an MC and ensemble member of Circus Oz. Now, he's a burlesque artist. Recently, this fella from Mungindi joined the all-male troupe Briefs, who were set to perform their mashup of drag, circus, comedy and burlesque at the Sydney Festival in January. Now, what they do, Briefs, is hard to define. Some have tried, describing it as burlesque with balls, or the union of RuPaul's Drag Race and Cirque du Soleil. There is plenty of technical skill in their fast-paced routines. And outrage is not the purpose. It's something much more profound. I'm speaking with Dale Woodbridge Brown from Auckland, where Briefs are touring.
Well, we kind of just describe ourselves as a bunch of idiots. But I see myself in this show as a clown, and just I play a rabbit in the show called Mr. Boogs, the Honey Bunny. And he's kind of, he plays with time. I have these clock pieces that I am magically able to turn on and off whenever I like in kind of a comedic sense. When I'm not have the bunny ears on, I'm kind of just a general acrobat. I partner alongside Louis Biggs for a bit of acro and stuff, and him and I do some, we call them the hype boys, where we're kind of like backup dancery kind of things for some of the drag queens, and we juggle in the background and do partner acrobatics and stuff like that. And I kind of, once I take off all the bunny gear, I have just a general costume that kind of matches everyone else's. And we do that as well as being the character that you play. We all kind of have a superpower, we called it, when we first began making the show. And mine happened to be time and that kind of stuff. And everyone had their own. And that's kind of how we developed some certain aspects of the show.
You know, as a very skilled and experienced circus performer, is there anything about Briefs that kind of even surprises or challenges or provokes you as a performer?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it is such a, because there is such, like, I'm quite flattered you called me a skilled acrobat. I never trained in it until I began with Circus Oz. So
I'm just thinking of you and that flying trapeze, that's all.
that's very, very nice of you to say. I have worked quite hard to get where I am and stuff. And I, to tell you the truth, I kind of feel that my storytelling and kind of comedy has kind of gotten me to where I am today. My physical kind of skills I have definitely helped, but I think I'm more along the lines of a clowny kind of character. I'm not, it's more entertainment than anything, but I think what I'm finding in Briefs is that everybody is so skilled and kind of one of the best of at their chosen field, so you kind of have to make sure that you're picking up your part of the show as well. Like I used to make fun of my baton twirling I used to do, and now I do it in this show again. I did a few acts in Oz with it as well, but I kind of just thought, oh, okay. But now I'm doing it in this show, and I actually really see that other people see twirling as they had no idea what it was really, and then they see what you can actually do with a little metal stick with two rubber ends, and I've learned to love it and make sure that I'm learning new things and making sure that my skills are kind of flawless, hopefully, so that the kind of contrast between the clowning and the skill is very clear, because I think that kind of it just complements each other of going, oh, okay, you can either be a really serious, serious skill person, or you can go into clowning and that kind of stuff. And if you're able to mesh the two together, then that just makes for a beautiful performance on everyone's behalf. And I think our team are actually quite skilled at that, at making sure that we move in and out of both of those things quite beautifully.
I saw the last performance, The Second Coming, at the Sydney Festival earlier this year, and I was amazed at just the variety of skills, and the kind of everything seemed to kind of flow very neatly. And I could imagine it was just like chaos backstage with, you know, there's extreme costume changes from scene to scene. And, you know, each kind of routine, if you'd like to call it that, would range between, you know, 5 and 10 minutes. And then there'd be a very quick turnaround and new performers would come out, and sometimes two or three on stage, and then would be joined by other cast members. Sometimes it was a solo. Did you ever get to see The Second Coming?
I did get to see The Second Coming when they came to Melbourne. I've known Mark and Fez for a few years now, so I've kind of have always been a big fan of the company and the show itself. And so when they last toured to Melbourne, I got to see Second Coming for the first time, which I just was like, I need to do this.
One thing about The Second Coming was the very first moment on stage, Fez came out and did an acknowledgement of country. And, you know, he's a very tall man, Samoan Australian. And I just remember thinking, I wonder if one day someone from Briefs will be able to do that. I mean, he never mentioned the word Aboriginal, which stunned me. And maybe he just thought the best way to do this is just talk about, he said words to the effect of, when you walk on this country, think of all the footsteps and all the people who've walked in this country before you. It was pretty simple. It was pretty simple, but it was pretty mind-blowing, actually. And I've heard a lot of acknowledgements of country from non-Aboriginal people, and a lot of welcomes to country by Aboriginal people. But that one kind of really stayed with me. Will you take on that responsibility this time here in Sydney at the Sydney Festival?
No, I don't think I will. It's one of those really hard things being like an Indigenous performer. And like with Circus Oz, I did it, but that was because I was the MC. And I think what I try and stress to people is that, like, for me personally, well, obviously I'm not allowed to acknowledge country in Sydney because I'm not of those people, but welcoming to that country, sorry, but acknowledgement can be done by anybody, and I encourage it should be. And right now I'm in New Zealand, and we got here, and the culture and culture here is still so strong, and it is celebrated by a large majority of the people who live here. And we did an exchange at the beginning of the season with the Q Theatre people, and it was absolutely beautiful. And just we had a woman named Debs who spoke Māori and did this kind of welcoming kind of welcome to our land and blah blah blah. And they did like a song and whatnot, and it was just beautiful to kind of see that. Both Fez and I broke out in tears because it was just, the culture and stuff is so strong and so celebrated. And like, I had brought some gifts that my family had made over, just kind of like cute little earrings and stuff of like emu feathers and whatnot, because I knew we were doing it. And we just gave it over, and I wasn't welcoming anybody. I was just letting them know that we're there to do good and to walk with them as a family and just try and get this project up and running and make it successful. And it was just absolutely beautiful. But no, I don't think I will be taking over that in Sydney. Fez encourages me to do as much of that as I can. But I think that responsibility kind of falls on every person who is on that country, and whoever's there, knowing whose country it is on and naming it and saying it out loud. I don't think it should particularly fall upon the shoulders of the Indigenous person. But I am very proud of where I'm from, and if it isn't being said or acknowledged, I will say something.
Well, look, best of luck with
Close Encounters and with the touring and I hope you have a long and successful career in this ensemble.
Oh, I do too. Thank you.
Do you ever kind of wonder when you're going to hit the ceiling and you can't go any further?
To be completely honest, I am 28 and I have found my dream job. This company embodies everything that I am as a person and as a performer. And I've recently moved back to my parents' place in Dubbo to be closer to my family. And this job kind of allows me to work as a performing artist and travel the world and then go back home to Dubbo and just chill out for a while. Like, I was in London for 3 months and Spain for 3 weeks, and I just went back to mum and dad's and sat on the couch. I was like, this is weird, but this is cool, and I'm completely happy. I get to play a touring superstar and then get to go home and go back to Dubbo and just walk around with no shoes on. I feel pretty great. So I hope I don't hit the ceiling just yet. I kind of am just at the beginning of living out my dream life at the moment, so I don't really want to. And being a clown, I can go forever.
It's amazing that you've moved home to Dubbo just to be near family.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Not I've been just, hanging out you know with
my
I mean,
nieces.
Yeah.
My nieces and nephews, I don't hardly hang out with the adults. I'm just usually with all my babies, and they're just so much fun. They're balls of energy, and if I'm not fun, they really just let me know. Yeah.
Don't want to hang out with you today. You're no fun.
Oh, my niece Alexis, she just walks past me and she's like, Uncle Bud, you're being just real lazy, like a little baby. I'm like, you're four. You don't talk to me like that. But then I'll get up and play with her because she's just absolutely hilarious.
Dale Woodbridge Brown, the newest cast member of the all-male burlesque outfit Briefs, speaking to me from Auckland. And Briefs, Close Encounters, is on at the Magic Mirrors Spiegel Tent in Hyde Park in Sydney, from the 6th to the 28th of January for the Sydney Festival. For now, that's our program. Away is co-produced by Rudy Bremer with technical production today by Tim Jenkins. We'll have more Indigenous art and culture for you next Saturday at 6 p.m. and on Tuesday afternoons at 1. We are always online, though, at abc.net.au/rn. Find Away in the drop-down menu. Also, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, or why not tune in on ABC Listen.